This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
It's time for Mind Matters, our monthly check-in with psychologist Anthony Smith, where we talk through the emotional stuff that affects many of us, but doesn't always get airtime. And this month, we're talking about guilt and shame. Anthony joins us now. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Lorraine.
Great to have you with us. What is shame? And I've always wondered, how does that differ from guilt?
I guess guilt and shame, like many of our emotions, actually do serve an important purpose sometimes. And I guess in this instance, guilt and shame are both emotions that we feel when we believe we've done something wrong, but they can be very different in how they affect us.
You're right. When we feel, it's almost like a dog with its tail between its legs, isn't it? We just want the earth to swallow us up and get away from everyone. So
guilt often says, I did something bad, and it focuses on our behavior. Hopefully that means that we can be motivated to repair the thing that we've done that was perhaps wrong, to make amends, to change our actions, and to repair relationships.
So is one more damaging than the other?
I think if we look at guilt in that way, there can be some helpful adaptive features to that. It can compel us to repair those relationships, to change our behavior. Whereas if we look at shame's message is really, it's not I've done something bad, it's more kind of broadly, I am bad, kind of attacking the core of who we are as people. It's not pointing to something that we've done, but it's something that we are collectively, that we're fundamentally flawed or unworthy.
So that's why it's so uncomfortable, because we're basically feeling as though there's something wrong with us. We're not right, and that doesn't sit very well. So my next question then is, why is it so common for the queer community to feel this? Because I feel like shame is something that we feel from a very early age, Anthony. Am I right?
Yes, you are absolutely right. And perhaps it's because many of us did grow up from an early age in families. We attended schools or were otherwise surrounded in our communities by views where identity wasn't affirmed. Perhaps our identity was even rejected by some of those experiences. And when, I guess, love and acceptance is conditional, that sends the message often from a very young age that you're not okay the way that you are.
Such a horrible message to receive, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can see that over time, some of those messages can be internalized. Statements like, you know, you're not normal, you're not enough. They just don't hurt in those moments, but they can shape how a person sees themselves for years to come.
So, and a question without notice is, I'm thinking, if we are the guardian of a young kid, we have a big responsibility. That could be teachers, parents, anyone who has a connection with a kid, to be very careful about what you say so that you don't cause them to feel this horrible feeling of shame.
Kids are like little sponges. They just absorb everything in their environments around them. So being really mindful about the messages, not just for little people, but for everyone, is really important.
We're chatting with psychologist Anthony Smith on Mind Matters. Today's conversation is all about guilt and shame and what we can do to start healing from them. Before we get on to what we can do, Anthony, how does shame show up in everyday life? Are there subtle signs we may not realize that could be shame?
There are some subtle signs, and I guess it does affect different people in different ways. For some people, it might shape, I guess, their thoughts and in turn their behaviors, perhaps in the way that they approach relationships. So it can lead to maybe an avoidance of intimacy or relationships with other people, which is often driven by that fear of being seen, rejected, or judged. But other people, it can manifest in maybe a different way. Some individuals respond to shame by striving for perfection or overachieving in various aspects of their life, perhaps using success as a shield against feelings of unworthiness.
Is it almost like because we're told that we're not worth it, we have to therefore make up in other areas to try and prove ourselves because within ourselves we don't feel like we're worth it. So we'll go and we'll get that amazing job, that amazing career, the car, et cetera, which might all be good to get anyway, but for the wrong reasons.
Overcompensation sometimes in aspects of life, which can mean other important areas of life, like relationships with other people, can be a detriment to that.
Anthony, you mentioned, you touched on intimacy before. It's something that I'm really interested in. How does the shame affect sex and relationships, particularly in the queer community?
A topic that is fascinating to me and one that I often see in my clinical practice, the people that come to therapy. And again, it manifests differently in different people. But for some, it can create a deep fear of being seen or touched or known, making vulnerability in relationships feeling very unsafe or overwhelming. For other people, shame can manifest as maybe a difficulty expressing some of their sexual desires because they fear rejection, judgment, or a belief that some of these sexual needs are not valid. For some people, that means that they can disconnect from pleasure altogether, perhaps avoiding sexual or emotional intimacy as a form of self-protection.
Wow.
And for some people too, we can see what we might term some like dissociative behaviours during sex or related to sex. So they can be practices like chemsex that some people might engage in, offering perhaps a temporary escape from emotional discomfort that comes with sex for them.
Just then you mentioned, you know, the fear of rejection. I'm just thinking as, you know, within the queer community, rejection and how we reject people is really important, isn't it? Because if some of us are predisposed to this fear of rejection anyway, and then we go and we shame someone as we reject them, that's really, that's like a perfect storm, isn't it, happening?
Yeah, and it speaks of those hardwired emotional systems within us, that shame, we're kind of hardwired, and perhaps you could make the argument that the evolution of our species was as a collective, and it was really important for us to align with the bigger group, to not get rejected, which is why we have these yet powerful responses emotionally within us.
Just a message. Thank you for this conversation. I've been carrying shame for years without realizing how much it's shaped my life. Anthony, we've spoken about shame and the impact it can have on us within the queer community, and particularly with partners and sex. The most important question, what can we do to begin to heal shame? Because from what we've discussed, and I'm thinking, I mean, we're not enjoying life, are we, if we're burdened with shame? We're not having those fulfilling relationships, the enjoyment. We're fearful of things all the time. How do we break free of all this, or at least start the process so we can be ourselves and enjoy life?
Yeah, and so it is a gradual process. And I think the important first steps are really, as we psychologists often talk about, naming to tame certain emotions. So the first step is really kind of noticing some of these feelings that we might be having, naming that emotion as shame perhaps, and taking some time to ask, finding out a bit more about this feeling that I'm having and where it might be coming from. And I guess that first important step brings shame out of the shadows and into our conscious awareness. And I think by nature, shame lives in the shadows. It's unspoken. And by talking about it is one kind of pretty significant step in beginning to heal shame. So kind of noticing it, I think, is important. Mm-hmm. Asking some questions about where it might come from in a curious way. And the nature of shame is that it kind of lives in the shadows. And I guess we fear that we might get rejected by people because of who we are or who we love or all those things that we were talking about before. And often with big emotions like shame, we psychologists might talk about some opposite actions, which are usually really useful things that we can do in order to address things like shame.
So when you say opposite actions, what sort of things do you mean?
If we think about shame, and the nature of shame urges us to hide, to withdraw, to say silent. Mm-hmm. And we can see that that's usually the action urge that that emotion brings, but that's probably not going to be very helpful or useful to us. In fact, doing the opposite is going to be most effective to address that particular emotion. And this kind of comes from a particular form of therapy called dialectical behavior therapies. And that talks about, I guess, all the way opposite actions to shame, which might involve connecting with people, with community that are going to affirm you, that aren't going to reject or invalidate you. Having this conversation in media, exactly how we're doing, is one really lovely opposite action to shame. I guess seeking connection when we feel the urge to isolate, wearing things that might affirm our gender expression, for example, are all really lovely opposite actions to shame.
There's lots of things we can do. When should we seek professional help? When should we come and see someone like yourself?
And I think it often, if people are noticing that it's impacting on those other important areas of life, perhaps their relationships with people, perhaps their functioning at work or in other areas of life, if they're noticing patterns of thinking that aren't particularly kind to themselves, that might be a time to speak with somebody.
Anthony, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I could talk about this for another hour. It's so important for everyone. Thank you so much. Such a thoughtful chat as always. Thank you for joining us today on Drive. And we'll catch you again next month. If that conversation has brought something up for you or you'd like to explore those feelings further, you can visit joy.org.au/support for a list of support services. And if you missed any part of this conversation, you can watch it later on the, or you can catch it later on the Joy Drive podcast feed. Anthony Smith is a psychologist and our regular guest for Mind Matters on Joy Drive.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.